Today, Does Not Compute is sponsored by Hired. This is a super easy way to find your next design or development job. Just sign up for Hired, and they'll get your information in front of over 3,000 companies all across the United States and Europe. Companies with available jobs in the cities you select go through your info and reach out with an interview offer. What's really neat is that those offers have salary and equity listed up front, which helps you decide which companies you want to move forward with. After you've found a great match, Hired will give you a $1,000 bonus to say thanks for using them. Yep, Hired doesn't cost anything to use and actually pays you when you find a job through them. You can double that bonus by signing up at hired.com/doesnotcompute. If you do that, you'll be eligible to get $2,000 instead. They've got contract and full-time jobs available in 13 of the biggest tech hubs in Europe and the US. So there's almost certainly a job that's right for you. Remember to sign up at hired.com/doesnotcompute to get a double thank you bonus when you find your next job. We're also sponsored by Linode. Linode makes it super easy to deploy and manage SSD-backed servers in just seconds. Their plans start at as little as $10 a month, and you can have a server up and running in less than a minute. It's all hourly billing, so you just pay for what you use. Since Linode gives you full virtual machines, you can do anything you want with them, as long as it's legal. Stuff like running Docker containers, encrypting disks, or setting up a personal VPN or Git server. All of their virtual machines are on a 40 gigabit network with SSD storage and Intel E5 processors. This is a real, production-ready setup. They've also got some great add-on services like really simple backups, great metrics with Longview, and incredibly easy load balancing with their node balancer. Head over to linode.com/doesnotcompute and sign up with the promo code doesnotcompute20 to get $20 in credit. That's up to 2 months of your own virtual private machine for free. So last week we talked a little bit about side projects, and side projects are something that I personally really enjoy, and they help me kind of focus on slightly different things, but still within development, which helps me grow in a lot of ways and definitely pushes me to become a more well-rounded developer, I think.
Well, they're great for remembering why you enjoy programming in the first place, right? We all kind of got into this, or most of us got into this, because we were making things. We just had lots of little side projects, and then eventually we got a job doing this full time. A lot of times for me, when I'm working on a side project, it just removes the monotony of it, right? It just feels different than having to do that because it's my job.
Yeah, and one of the things that we talked a little bit about last week is that people shouldn't feel guilty about having side projects that they're never going to finish. Side projects where the only goal is to experiment with maybe some new technology or a new language or whatever that is, and just get some experience with it and learn and grow as a person and as a software developer. And that's totally okay. But I think there is a bit of a counterpoint to that that we should probably talk about. You linked me this great article by Jessica Abel, and in it, she talks a little bit about the idea of idea debt, where if you're trying to release stuff, if you want to make things, and you go out and you set up a marketing site and you buy the domain and you tell everybody you're making this thing, but then you never actually do it, then that could actually be kind of unhealthy because it's not just exploratory. You're not going in saying, this is just me messing around and that's fine. You're going in saying, I'm going to make a product, and then not doing that.
Right. She sums it up really well by saying, idea debt is when you spend too much time picturing what a project is going to be like, too much time thinking about how awesome it will be to have this thing done and in the world, and too much time imagining how cool you will look and how in demand you'll be and how much money you'll make, right? And I can definitely say that I have done that a lot. So I'll have these ideas and I'll start planning them. Maybe I'll start writing down an architectural design for it, or maybe even I'll even start bootstrapping some code or something, and I'll just never finish it. So all that time I spend thinking about this thing only to abandon it, eventually it adds up to a lot. You know, if I think about all the side projects I've never released, all the time I spent planning, thinking, talking to other people about it, only to do nothing with that, that's more or less me just wasting time. Right. I could have done the same thing with that time as if I was watching Netflix.
This actually reminds me a lot of what I think pretty much everyone does in high school at least a few times, which is, hey, man, we should start a band. It'll be so cool.
Oh, God.
And we're going to play all the local shows. And you sit around and you spend a bunch of time talking about your first album name and album cover and the band name.
Yeah.
And what you want everything to be like down the road. And none of that matters because you haven't written a single song.
Right. Yeah, I have a lot of experience in that area. You know, hearing, being on tour and having people talk to you, like share their ideas, like, yeah, I just got a guitar and I'm going to start a band and I'm going to go tour and I'm going to do all that. And I'll ask them, well, can you play the guitar yet? Can you write a song yet? You know, do you have a job so that you can buy food while you're on tour, because you won't get paid to go on tour for a very long time? Yeah, that's exactly what it's like.
And of course, that's not inherently harmful. That's not inherently bad, because everybody likes to imagine cool stuff like that. Of course, that's a very human thing. But when it becomes a pattern for you, and this is something that I've certainly struggled with personally a lot, especially over the last couple of years, having these ideas and then just either not having or not making the time to actually execute on them, even though I really wanted to. I spent more time just kind of thinking about them and then being like, oh, well, you know, somebody's already doing something similar. I'm going to give up, even though I've already invested 80 hours into this project.
I saw an awesome tweet by Ben Orenstein. Now, if you've ever heard of Ben Orenstein, he is someone that I look up to a lot. He's one of the lead programmers, I guess, of Thoughtbot. In this tweet, he more or less said, people always say things like, I don't have time to blank, and in parentheses he put, I don't have time to blank and watch the same amount of Netflix. And I read that tweet while I was watching Netflix and I was eating lunch. But it hit me really hard, right? Because a lot of people will say, I don't have time for this, or I don't have time for that. And that might be fair. You know, they might need the Netflix time to recharge, but I can say in the past, I've been that person where I'm saying, you know, I don't have time to do this thing that could be beneficial for me because I just don't want to do anything. I just want to keep watching my Netflix shows.
So I think you have to be careful there, though, because stuff like Netflix time, stuff like just downtime in general, is really important. A lot of times the reason people will invest a lot of time in watching TV or playing video games or whatever is because they don't have the creative energy to go out, work all day, then come home and work on side projects all night. That isn't something that people can do all the time. That's just not realistic. You can't write good code 24 hours a day. It's just not possible.
No, I totally agree. And in fact, the first reply to that tweet was saying something along the same lines, and he acknowledged that that's definitely a fair response. But with that said, I think it's also easy to get into a pattern, get into a habit of using all of your free time and not putting any of that free time into anything that could be productive.
Yeah, it's, like with everything in life, it is a balance.
But this whole discussion brings up another really great article that I read earlier today, actually, by Kimber Lockhart. And the title of this article is Don't Create a Sense of Urgency, But Foster a Sense of Purpose. This is something that I've been thinking about a lot lately. And it ties really well into the idea of idea debt, because I tend to personally create an unneeded sense of urgency for a lot of things that I do. For example, if I'm practicing guitar a lot, I'm like, I'm going to do this professionally. Or if I'm surfing a lot, I'm going to do it as much as I can to the best of my ability. And I think it's good for you to approach whatever you're doing with excellence, but that's different than stressing yourself out by creating unneeded urgency. Like, I have to keep doing this. I have to do this a lot, if that makes sense.
I think it's rare for individuals to push themselves this hard for stuff that they like doing. Definitely something that can happen. But the place where this happens all the time is in companies, where it's like, we have this deadline. We need to have these features shipped. We need to have this 2.0 shipped in 3 weeks. How do we make that happen? And it never results in anything good. When you put that kind of pressure on development teams, it might make them work faster, but it definitely will not make them work better. In the long term, you're going to wind up with a bunch more technical debt than you would if you took things at a reasonable pace. You're going to have a higher turnover rate because people are going to be leaving. It's just not a good way to run a business. And unfortunately, it is the way many companies are run. Another problem that comes up is when people feel really rushed and it's like, oh, everything is urgent. Everything has the little important exclamation point in my inbox. This is bad. What happens is that they don't have that time to restore the creative energy like we were just talking about. And that means that not only are they not going to be working on side projects, it means that the projects that they're working on professionally are also going to suffer because they don't have that time to go out and just refresh.
Right. For me, having an almost false sense of urgency or a sense of urgency forced on me, a lot of the time it leads to shortcuts or just sloppy code. And that's actually one of the points that she makes here is that when you're in a rush, it's much harder to do things correctly. I'm sure we've all heard the saying, you know, you can have this fast, cheap, or...
fast, cheap, or good.
Fast, cheap, or good. You can only pick two, right? And that's kind of how I feel about it. You know, when I'm in a rush, it takes my focus off of doing this thing well, you know, making sure it's tested, making sure it's functional, making sure it's doing what it needs to do and doing it well to, does it just work? You know, is the end result what I want? And oftentimes you sacrifice time in testing, right? Which you should not do, but that's often where time gets shaved off, you know? So you're skipping over edge cases that might crop into the code. It's just not a good situation.
In order to kind of fight this in myself lately, I've actually been really forcing myself to spend more time doing non-computer related things. I've been going to a lot more concerts. This weekend, I actually took a day trip out to do some snowboarding, which is something I love to do. I'm a massive fan, but I haven't been in 3 years because for the last 3 years, I have just been pushing myself constantly all the time to be working, to be releasing. And since I made that change to spend more time refreshing myself, I've actually been putting out way more work of a higher quality at a faster rate. So this is something that, at least for me personally, makes such a huge difference. When I'm not pushing myself, when everything isn't urgent to me, I work so much better.
That makes me really happy to hear you say that because, I mean, it is true. You know, it's definitely true. If you spend too much time focusing on one thing and just circling back to one thing, you're going to get burnt out. It's just everyone, you know, that's how people are. That's what being a human is like. And in our culture, especially in what we do in programming and all that, it's really kind of pushed on us really just to work all the time, 10x, you know, be as efficient as you can all the time, just ship all the time, you know what I mean? It just makes me tired thinking about it, honestly. But really, I mean, I think everyone should have a hobby. Everyone should have something away from a computer that they really enjoy. You know, if you don't know how to play guitar, pick one up. If you don't know how to snowboard, go try it out. You know, if you've never been surfing or whatever, it doesn't matter what it is. As long as you're getting away from a computer, as long as you're giving your mind that time to just re-energize itself. And I find all the time that when I do take a couple of days away from side projects or working outside of office hours, you know, like maybe over the weekend or something, I'll try to not look at a computer at all apart from recording this podcast. And I find when I go back on Monday, I'm just excited to be back at work. You know, I'm full of energy to put towards what I have to do. So all of that to say this, if you're a dev and you feel like you're constantly working under pressure, you're constantly being rushed to deliver, rushed to ship this feature or whatever, that's a tough spot to be in. I've definitely been in that position. I know, Paul, you've been in that position. And it's really easy to just become worn down quickly. So I guess if I have any advice to offer anyone that's in that position, it's as much as you can, focus on being consistent and not fast. And I actually have that written down on a post-it note, which is attached to my iMac at work. I have 3 points written down. I say, the first one is, don't try to be fast. The second one is try to be consistent. And the third one is write tests. And those are, for 2016 anyway, those are my 3 focus points. in terms of development. Don't try to be fast, just try to be consistent with what I write, and then also test what I write. And I find that the more I remind myself, don't try to rush, just be consistent. You know, even if I'm under pressure to deliver quickly, I find that I catch more bugs, or I spend more time on things that should have time spent on them. I found this thing called nightwatchjs.org, and it has been really useful to me recently. If you're familiar with end-to-end testing or outside-in testing or whatever you want to call it, essentially what Nightwatch does is it automates Selenium WebDriver testing, right? So you would install this and you would write some tests like open this URL, click on this button, make sure this thing is there, or assert that this modal is now open, or, you know, you're basically just testing your UI. And instead of having to go through and click on things yourself, refresh the page, fill out forms yourself, you can just program that, right? And that's what we're all about, is automating things that take our time. So yeah, you would just write your tests and your tests would go through and interact with the browser and report to you what happened.
So I've used WebDriver a fair bit in the past, and it's always kind of a pain because it's really not well documented, and or there are docs, but they're really hard to find or scattered. It's generally just not very fun to work with. But this is really, really nice. They have an awesome guide that walks you through the whole API and how it works, and it's all in one spot and pretty comprehensive from what I've seen. So I think this is kind of one of those things that takes a concept everyone should be doing, ideally, and makes it way more accessible, which I always really like to see.
Right. And another thing that saved me so much time when I started using Nightwatch was cross-browser testing. So what is awesome is that you can specify different environments, whether you want it to run in Chrome or Firefox or IE, or it even has integration with Sauce Labs or BrowserStack. And so you can say, run all these tests in Chrome or run all these tests in IE, which is amazing. So once you have your test suite written out and you start making tweaks to your UI, say someone comes back and says, hey, why don't we change this and, you know, have it do this instead? And then you make that change and suddenly you might get bug reports like saying, hey, this doesn't work in IE anymore, right? This kind of fixes that because now you can make that change and all of your testing is automated. You can have it test Chrome, Firefox, IE, and whatever else for you, right? So for me, on a recent project I've been using it on, it saved me just tons of time.
For anybody who doesn't know, Sauce Labs and BrowserStack are web-based platforms that will actually spin up virtual machines on demand that have different sets of operating systems and browsers, and then let you interact with those in order to do browser testing. You can use them manually or automated, and this is a great way to kind of not have to deal with manual browser testing anymore, at least in the majority of cases if you have a good test suite. Sean, does this do anything with screenshot comparison?
I know you can take screenshots with it. I'm not sure if it has anything built in for like diffing, visual diffing, but I know you can take screenshots.
Nice. Well, if you're working on something that has a web front end and you don't have any tests right now for that, or you aren't happy with the tests, this is probably really worth checking out. Some pretty big names are using it. I know, Sean, you mentioned that several of the Vue.js projects are using Nightwatch.
Correct. Most specifically, VueRouter, he's using it to make sure it works cross-browser.
That's very, very cool. This is something that I'm really happy to see, getting that actual real cross-browser testing automated. It's been a major pain point in the past, and this is a big step forward, it seems like.
Yeah. What's kind of funny, I used it as kind of like a load tester as well when I set up the Beartooth API thing, because I have to communicate between Stripe and referral Sasquatch. So I just wrote a real quick thing. And I just, on three different computers, I had Chrome and Firefox submitting requests to the server at the same time.
It's funny.
It's pretty funny. Yeah, it was great. But yeah, if you wanted to do that, you could do that with Nightwatch as well. But really, I mean, this thing had the lowest barrier to entry I've ever seen for a test suite or anything that does what it does.
Yeah, it's a really simple API. It's chainable. It looks a lot like jQuery, just in terms of the syntax you're going to be writing out. It's pretty awesome.
And then I included faker.js. So I was using faker.js to include dummy data. So when I was sending requests to Stripe and I was checking to see, you know, how customers are created and all that, I didn't have to try to come up with some fancy way to make not duplicated data. I just used faker.js and it worked amazingly well.
So I think the last thing we have here is OpenTalk RTC. Now, this is kind of a weird one, but Sean and I are actually using this now for recording the show. We record our audio locally, but when we're chatting, we obviously need to be able to hear each other. And we like to have a webcam feed up as well so that we can kind of see the emotions of the other person. It just makes it easier to do a recording since we're never in the same room. We've used a bunch of different things, pretty much every solution you can think of out there. We've tried it at least once or twice. And there's a lot of stuff that kind of works, but is unreliable or with lots of drops. I think everything else we've tried, we would get at least one or two drops per recording.
At least.
With this thing, we've been on the phone for like an hour and a half at this point, and there hasn't been a single problem. It's crystal clear. The audio sounds great. Everything is awesome. And I mean, the best thing is that it's using WebRTC. So it's like a nerdy, cool thing to play around with as well.
There hasn't been any video to audio lag either that I've noticed.
No, it's been awesome. Very in sync. So if you need to do any sort of video chat stuff, this is definitely worth checking out. I know this isn't a really dev-related thing, but a lot of developers do need to do this sort of stuff, whether it's for calls with clients or whatever it is, on a pretty regular basis. So having a reliable tool for it that's easy to use is awesome. All you have to do is go to the website, opentalkrtc.com, and then you just enter a room name and you can send the link out to people. It's dead simple and works incredibly well.
It's about as good as you can say about anything in the web world.
So responsive image stuff is pretty difficult. And I know it's something that a lot of developers struggle with still because the browser support isn't overly consistent depending on how you want to implement things. And there are so many different ways to implement things. And it's a pretty complex topic. We're going to do a deep dive on that at some point in the future. But there is an article that we wanted to point out to everybody that if you haven't read, you should absolutely take a look at.
The article is Source Set and Sizes, written by Eric Portis. And responsive images are something that I honestly haven't paid too much attention to. And that's just because there are so many moving parts in web right now. It's just hard to know everything, right? But I know that is something that I definitely need to research. I need to know more about because it's a big thing. You know, more and more traffic is mobile-based and images are everywhere, right? But this article does a really, really great job of breaking down what the problem is, you know? So he breaks it down into separate parts. Like, for example, part one is what's wrong with media queries? And so he goes through and with actually pretty great illustrations breaks down what the actual problem is.
Yeah, it makes it very easy to understand no matter what skill level you're at, no matter how long you've been writing HTML and CSS. He explains it all with very clear concepts. The illustrations, like Sean said, they are adorable. And it's just a perfect, perfect article in so many ways. He does a great job. And this was written a couple years ago. This was written in 2014, but it is still perfectly relevant to this day. The topics and concepts that he's talking about are completely modern, and the support for them has only gotten better over the last couple of years. Like I said, we're definitely going to talk about this in more depth. This is something I personally have been thinking a lot about lately. Obviously, with my job at Imagix, where we do a lot of responsive image stuff. But for now, we just wanted to point people to this article so that you can start taking a look at this if it's something you need to be worrying about and wrapping your head around these concepts and topics, because this article is just so good. It tells you all the pluses and minuses of every way of doing this, or very nearly every way of doing this, and it's just the best. It's so good. Another big thanks to today's sponsors. Linode is a super easy way to get your own virtual private machines up and running in just seconds. These are real VMs running on an awesome 40 gigabit network backed by SSDs. You can spin up a ton of compute power or just a single server, whatever fits your needs. Take a peek at linode.com/doesnotcompute and sign up with the promo code doesnotcompute20 to get a $20 credit on your account. Hired is a painless way to find your next design or development job. Once you've signed up, Hired will get your information in front of over 3,000 companies across the United States and Europe. You'll then get 5 or more interview requests per week, and those will all have salary and equity listed up front. It's totally free, and you can get a $2,000 thank you bonus when you find your next job through Hired by signing up at hired.com/doesnotcompute. Remember to rate and review Does Not Compute in iTunes. It's really easy. In fact, we'll have a link in show notes, and it's one of the best ways you can help spread the word about the show. Thanks so much for your support, and we hope to talk to you soon on Slack or on Twitter at DNCcast.
So, Paul, I know that we haven't really highlighted specifically any useful tools lately. It's been a while.
We did Postman last week.
Oh, never mind.
I know. I was going to say that. I was like, oh, we can just say it's been a while, but it hasn't actually.
Yeah. Well.
Yeah.